that's always been what drives me. I really love empowering others. I really like making a positive impact. I usually don't talk about this on shows just because it was earlier before I started the businesses, but I had some amazing opportunities living in pretty rural and impoverished areas building social businesses. And so I would love to get back into that space as I get older as well. So for me, it's really all about that impact. How many people can you impact with the businesses you're building in some sort of positive way? And FreeUp has really allowed me to do that and harness that power because of, you know, you're giving a lot of people jobs, and then you're also helping people build profitable businesses that could give them that lifestyle that they're looking for.
You are listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
So welcome to another episode of Hooked on Startups. I'm here today with none other than Connor Gillivan. Connor, welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on today. I appreciate it.
Now Connor is the poster child for entrepreneurs. There's no other way of putting it. So you started your first business whilst you were in your dorm at university. Now, I think, is it pronounced Quinnipiac University?
Quinnipiac, yeah. Quinnipiac. That was really close.
Almost, yeah, exactly. Almost got it. So there you are. So you're at university. So you started your first business there, which in 4 years ended up turning over $20 million. And then you decided that was just the beginning. So you then set up an online business called FreeUp.com, which we'll talk about shortly.
Absolutely.
So I guess, what are you, 27 and retired now?
No, I am 27 years old. I've always been interested in entrepreneurship, even from a very young age. I had a cousin who ran his own business, and that was my first job. So from seeing him running his business and starting to build his family and earning money all on his own, that was something I immediately got addicted to. And once I saw an opportunity in college, I just started to go after it. And that's kind of been the pattern since then.
So what was the opportunity? Did you not have your parents breathing down your neck saying, son, you know, what about your books? And you're going, but I have this business. So how did you get started?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually have had the pleasant surprise of being able to work with one business partner for these 7 years on both companies. And we were both in the same business classes when we were at Quinnipiac. And he was telling me about how he was getting interested in the Amazon marketplace. Around 2009, it was starting to blow up and moving into other product categories. And so he started buying textbooks back from students on campus and just selling them on the Amazon marketplace for a slight markup, shipping them out of his dorm room, and he was looking for other people to get involved. And so I saw the opportunity, and I just knew it was going to be a great experience. So I poured myself into it. And over the 2 years that we spent, you know, going to classes, fulfilling orders, trying to grow the business, and hiring some of our college friends, it really started to take off. And that was what we were able to move into after we graduated.
But again, yes, it's funny because whenever I talk to entrepreneurs, they always give me the short version, which is, you know, and actually, so we started this business and then we became multimillionaires. And so, you know, so what's the bit in the middle? What's the bit where you're holding your head in your hands going, oh my God, what have we done?
Yeah.
Because it's like any entrepreneur, you feel slightly fooled by all these successful entrepreneurs because as you start the process, you go, hang on, this is much more difficult than anyone said.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we went through a lot of those points in running the business from the, you know, point one where we had this idea to start buying textbooks and starting to list them on Amazon. One of the biggest things we went through is just learning Amazon. So they have all these policies, all these rules. And we ran into a lot of situations where they would get mad at us at first, right? Maybe we created a product listing in the wrong way and they came down on us and said, hey, if you don't, you know, shape these up, we're gonna remove your selling abilities. Those were points where maybe we were in class or we were just walking around campus. We got an email notification and boom, whoa, could the business go down? What do we have to do? So, you know, that's a situation. We went through a lot of bad decisions hiring a lot of our friends when we were in college. So we noticed that we couldn't do everything, and we had a lot of friends. We were both in a fraternity together. So we started putting this offer out to our friends, hiring them, and trying to get them set up on schedules. But there was a lot of issues with even just getting them to show up to shifts or getting to do their jobs on time. So we ran into a lot of management issues as well. So a lot of headaches along the way that we ran into while building that first business.
But so what stopped you from giving up? So what stopped you from going, hang on a second, this is a massive distraction. What am I doing?
You know? Yeah. So I've always been someone who has that kind of long-term vision, who's always seen what the business or what you're doing today could become. And so with this particular business, I saw that Amazon's marketplace was very young, and we were one of the, you know, maybe couple thousand sellers that was starting to really get into it at the time. And so I always saw it as a way that we could expand into other categories, you know, start to sell other things other than books. And I saw that big opportunity years down the line. So when we ran into these roadblocks, I always had that in my mind, and I just kept pushing forward.
But whose advice did you seek? So did you do this on your own, or were you going, does anyone know how to help me?
Yeah, a lot of Google searches. Amazon has their own seller forum as well, that where, you know, people that have been selling there even longer than we have would be posting horror stories that they ran into and how they found their way around it with Amazon. So we spent hours reading those and trying to learn how others had gotten through similar situations that we had. You need someone to be mentoring you along the way. And once we actually graduated from college and moved down to Orlando, Florida, I spent a lot of time trying to network with other entrepreneurs in the area and was able to build up a pretty great group of mentors who were, you know, 10 to 20 years older than us, but that had been through a lot of building businesses, and they were able to help us in the hardest of times with that business.
And do you find that as an entrepreneur, you tend to dismiss mentors at an early stage? In other words, I don't need these guys. You know, they're old. They don't know about Amazon. And so do you think you've changed your view on that as your business has progressed?
Yeah, I think that comes with a little bit of maturity as well. Starting so young, we were just kind of going into it full force. We thought we could figure it out. If we didn't, we would just kind of fail and keep going. But over the years, I've definitely seen the value of creating those relationships with others who have built businesses and can really talk you through different situations. So I have a great group of mentors and people that I still talk to today. And I know I can go to them for advice. And I love that.
And would you say that the thing that what has kept you going more than anything? So, you know, you've got the initial idea, you start with, you know, half a dozen books, you test the process. Mm-hmm. So you talk about your long-term vision. I mean, do you actually know that you have a long-term vision until someone says to you, that's a long-term vision?
That's just kind of the way my brain works. I'm always thinking 2, 3, 4 years down the line. And I actually learned with the first business that can be a hindrance as an entrepreneur if you're too focused on the future and not enough on the today, this week, this month. And so I've kind of started to mold my own philosophy over the years of, you want that 1-2 year knowledge or vision of where you're looking to be, where that ideal reality is for your company. But you also want to stay hyper focused on the current month. So what steps are you taking today, in this week, in this month, that are slowly working you towards that ultimate reality? So that's really a strategy that I've come to use rather than just looking to the future.
And I guess that's right, because it's I think in one of your interviews you talk about leaving your accounting to the last minute and having, you know, 20 gigabytes of accounting information to go through.
Definitely. Yeah, we had that in college. That was one of the things that we did before we started to hire a bookkeeper and accountant. We would hunker down at the end of, you know, let's say a couple months periods, and we'd be going through credit card statements with thousands of lines of transactions, trying to reconcile them in QuickBooks. So that was a cool learning experience just to go through that. But we've definitely realized that you want to surround yourself with people that can do that for you, that can do it better than you. so that you're always focused on what you do best for the business.
Okay. So I want you to go back to you, let's say a few months into your first business. Mm-hmm. And I want you to start mentoring yourself. So what advice are you going to start giving yourself? Are you going to sort of grab yourself by the lapels and shake yourself, or are you going to?
Yeah, definitely. So one of my biggest weaknesses, and my advice would be, one of my biggest weaknesses was taking things off of my plate. So as we were building the business, and as most entrepreneurs are, you're going to start with a certain number of startup tasks. You're going to go ahead and work on them, whether it's, you know, setting up your marketing, setting up your sales organization, putting together your first product version and getting that out to your customers. Me and my business partners, we were doing all of this, and I had that tendency just to keep piling things on. I also had classes, I had other commitments, but I just kept putting things on my plate. And what it eventually led to happening was I wasn't as effective as I could be in the areas that I could help the business with most. So one of my biggest pieces of advice is for myself, if I were to go back and start, you know, grabbing myself, is, you know, stay focused on what you do best, and that's going to help the business grow the most. Otherwise, utilize your business partners and find other people that are going to be able to take those other areas of the business to the next level. And that's a philosophy that both myself and my business partner have really taken on over the past 5 years or so. And we've just seen it give us the ability to build businesses so much faster. So that's a huge piece of advice I would offer to others.
And which is great. And I think that's absolutely right, that this idea that you tend to want to take on too much because mm-hmm. you feel that nobody can do it as well as I can.
Exactly.
But then you learn the hard way that that's not always the case. But you start, so you moved out, or you expanded out of books. Yeah. I think you discovered drop shipping.
Yeah, absolutely. So we did. So with the books, we were purchasing them, storing them in the dorm room. And then as we got sales, we would package them and ship them out to the customer. But we just didn't love that, right? We were like, is there any way that we could not ever touch the products? Because putting them into a package, sending them to the right place, that's a big hassle for us. And so we did. We learned a lot about drop shipping. And it took us about a year and a half to really understand how to communicate and talk to suppliers that can drop ship. Because there's thousands of suppliers around the United States, and a lot of them want to sell their products, but maybe a third of them are actually going to be able to work with drop shipping because of the overhead that you need to pick, pack, and ship every product. Almost the same issue we were having with the textbooks in our college dorm room.
Yeah.
And so we learned a lot about how to target the wholesale departments of these suppliers and just say, you know, listen, we're interested in selling your products on Amazon. We do it really well, and we want to do it through drop shipping. If they are interested, that's great. If they weren't, then, you know, we would move on to the next person and try to work with them. And a big way that we identified these suppliers was by looking at other retailers, other sellers on Amazon that we knew drop shipped, and we would go ahead and research the manufacturers they were working with. So we very much looked at our competition, kind of tried to steal some suppliers from them, and work with those people, because if they were working with them drop shipping, they probably could work with us doing the same thing.
And I think one of the great things that you did is you started a business that was immediately cash flow positive. Mm. You buy low, you sell high, rinse and repeat. Yep. So have you come across entrepreneurs who want to start a business where their cash flow is pushed out to a future event? And how do you think you would sort of answer those challenges?
Yeah, definitely. So there's definitely two camps, right? There's your cash flow positive business mindsets, and I definitely lean more towards that one. I love being able to create profits quickly, even if it's from some sort of consulting gig. That's kind of what we used at first when we were building FreeUp, was let's offer e-commerce consulting services. We'll make some profits off those. We'll take some, we'll pay ourselves, we'll put the rest into the business and build it organically. Then, of course, there's your other side of the table, and you read more about this in the news, where there's, you know, there's companies with these big platforms or these apps or these different technology ideas, and sure, they need, you know, maybe a couple hundred thousand to $1 million just to get the idea off the ground. So that's definitely not my area of expertise. I'm more on the cash flow positive side, but in order to really tackle that, I think it takes a lot of experience with prior business before you can get into that side of it, because you need to be able to start talking to investors. You need to be able to really talk intelligently about your product and how you're going to reach your end customers and kind of scale things out very quickly if you were to get that money. So my advice to anyone who has that kind of idea that definitely needs that investment is, you know, definitely do your education and try to find a way that it could be cash flow positive before you have to get that investment.
And I think you're right. It's not a myth, but I think 99.97362% approximately of all startup businesses are probably not those businesses where someone receives huge amounts of VC funding. They're businesses just like yours, where you start with the grind and you learn and you make money. And a lot of questions that we get are from entrepreneurs saying, you know, like, I just want to get started. I have this burning ambition. So do you think that something like dropshipping, is it still a viable business for people to start with?
Yeah, for sure. It absolutely is. It's still very hot right now in the e-commerce industry. Just from being in e-commerce for the past 9 years, it's been growing exponentially. Every year, I think it's been over 20% growth from the previous year. So there's a lot out there still. Right now, it's extremely popular to be using Facebook ads to bring people into landing pages and then pushing them through a Shopify store or a WooCommerce store. And a lot of these people are still using dropship methods, whether it be through Alibaba Express or working directly with suppliers like we have. Same thing goes for selling on Amazon or eBay. A lot of people are still utilizing the dropship business model, and it is very much still viable.
And so what challenges, do you still have challenges in dropshipping, or are you moving more towards, we'll talk about FreeUp in a minute, because that's another brilliant sort of development of what you're doing. But so to the aspiring entrepreneur who's going, hang on, this sounds like quite a good idea. This dropshipping, because there's low capital expenditure, I can start from my bedroom. How do I get started? What's your sort of cut on that?
Yes, of course. So there is a lot that goes into dropshipping. You have to learn a lot. There are a lot of intricacies that you have to go through. A couple of the biggest ones are actually having permission to sell a certain product. And especially if it's branded, if you're not creating your own type of product. So one of the big things is you have to go to these suppliers. So, you know, let's say you're looking to sell a children's product and you have the specific manufacturer that you want to work with. You need to go with them and you have to create a distribution agreement with them that gives you the permission to actually advertise and sell their goods. And then as you receive those sales, you can send them to them and they'll ship it out to the customer. So that's a huge part of it that's kind of on the back end that no one really talks about. You know, they talk about the hype of never having to touch the product, but you have to create those relationships and you want to work with the right suppliers so that you know that the customer is actually going to get the product. So that's a big part of dropshipping. Another aspect that goes into it is more on the management side is that's always going to be a con of dropshipping is that you never have completely accurate inventory. So because you're working with a supplier and they have their own warehouse, they're going to be sending you daily, weekly, monthly inventory updates. And they might say, you know, this product's in stock today, but you get a report the next day it's out of stock. You need a team that's constantly updating that on your website so that you're not getting sales for products that go out of stock and then you get angry customers. And that can kind of just, you know, lead to more obstacles that you can run into. So that's a huge part of dropshipping too that I don't think enough people focus on.
And also, there's the whole sort of supply demand curve as well. So I guess you're, how do you know that you can... Busy season, like Black Friday, for example. Mm. You know, how do you know that you've got enough people to answer the phones, or you know? So how do you forecast these things?
Yeah, that's a tough one. So just to answer that last question, in general, the holiday season, which goes from about Black Friday right through the 22nd, 23rd of December, that time period is usually 4 to 5 times the average sales that you would get in any other month of the year. So that's kind of you're leading up the entire year in retail up to that holiday season. That's going to be 4 to 5 times, and it is extremely hard to estimate how much staff you're going to need, how many sales you're going to be getting, how many updates you're going to have to be making. And this was something that we learned a lot from as we went through the holiday seasons with our e-commerce business. The first one, while we were in college, we didn't hire enough people and we were completely swamped to the point where we weren't able to optimize our sales to the level that the demand was coming because we just didn't have enough people. And
it's the people, because you need people presumably. So when the orders come into your website, you've got to then translate those and say, okay, this is an order for that company. That's an order for that company. So there's a manual process in between. So it's not all, you don't just sit on a beach and watch the money come in, basically.
No, you don't. You need someone there, like you said, to communicate those orders, unless you have a very sophisticated order management system. But even then, you usually need someone to be watching over it. And then you also need the people to be talking to the customers. So in the holiday season, people want to know about their tracking, about where their product is, even more than in any other month of the year. So you need those people on staff that are going to be able to talk to them, handle returns, give refunds. You know, if people want to cancel an order, how do you handle that and move things forward? So there is a lot of staff that you need on board there.
Is there a particular product that you would recommend someone starts with, just as a like a training dropship product?
Yeah, so in terms of actually picking a product to start with, I would definitely look for something that's going to be more on the viral side at the time they are looking to start up. So I might go to Facebook and type in plus free shipping, and I would look through the results that come up. I would look at different ads, at what different people are posting, and I would try to find a common trend. Maybe there's the fidget spinner is really hot right now. Maybe there's a number of different products that could sell really well in the summer. I might choose, you know, something that could work well there. And then, of course, you have to go and find the supplier that's actually creating that product.
Yes.
And then you can test it out with that. And the reason that I give that the viral product as an example is because if you can hit the right one and you can start to sell it a little bit, you can start to test your system. You can start to see if all of your processes are working out. And you'll be forced to learn the operations of e-commerce a little bit faster than if, let's say, you were to, you know, choose a product that just isn't going to sell that fast. And you're kind of sitting there wondering what's happening and how to kind of get everything off the ground.
And how do you get, so you talk about Facebook ads and Instagram. In your experience, what is the best way for someone who's starting with a limited budget? How should they test their business?
Yeah, so my recommendation would be Facebook ads, but Facebook ads are a whole beast of their own. I am not an expert in Facebook ads. I know a lot of people that are, and so my strategy in that aspect is find someone who's great at it, hire them for a limited amount of time to get your ads up and running at a high level, and see if you can start to bring in some sales in that fashion, but on a budget that works for you. I think it's unrealistic to think you're going to drive a lot of sales just for free at first.
Yeah.
If you do want to test some customers and get them into your shop and get them to start buying things, you do want to pay a little bit to get them in. And then, of course, there's other long-term plays that you can do to get customers. You know, you're creating good content. You're targeting specific Facebook, LinkedIn groups. You're going after customers in different ways. But if you do want to test your machine a little bit first, I would encourage people to check out Facebook ads and find someone that's an expert at it.
And this is great. Now, talking about finding someone who's an expert, because if you go onto Facebook, every third posting is from someone who can tell you how to build a list of 100,000 emails, you know, within 2 days or something. Yep. Now, I've looked at I've skimmed through your book and the book which you published called How to Free Up Your Company, 50 Secrets, How to Bootstrap Your Company. And my impression was that it was a real heartfelt piece of valuable information. So, I'd like you to talk a little bit about that as well, because I read the introduction, I read through the first couple of chapters.
And
it is not one of those terrible ebooks that you get, where the font size is like an inch font and it's spread out so that you can say that you're published. This, I think, is a really valuable book. So is this your way? Do you find yourself needing to sort of share all this information now?
Yeah, absolutely. So it is exactly what you said. The book was an idea that my business partner that I've been talking about, his name is Nathan, that him and I came up with maybe a year and a half or so before I actually started writing it and then went through the publishing process. And we had gone through about 6 years of working together and starting to build these two businesses. And we had just learned a ton from them. Like we were talking in the beginning, we failed a lot, to be completely honest. We were young. We thought we could figure things out on our own. And we ran into a lot of roadblocks that we never saw coming and that really set our businesses back. And so the purpose with writing this book was to really dive into those examples where we were struggling and then give the readers opportunities to try to avoid those as they were building their business. And a lot of it, you know, goes right into different bootstrapping methods. Like I was saying earlier, we love the cash flow positive business models. We love taking money that you're earning and then kind of portioning it out into hiring people, putting it into other areas of growth, and then also paying yourself because you need to be paid to actually keep going. And then a lot of it in the middle of the book dives into how you build that initial team when you're trying to get things off your plate. So again, coming back to where my weakness was taking too many things onto my plate, that big lesson that I learned, a lot of it is put into that book and how you can get other people to surround you and really help you build your business organically. And one of the biggest things that I love about the book is that each lesson has a story from the businesses that we built too. So if you're someone who's just getting started, you can see how it applied to our lives and you can start to apply it to yours as well. So that's really what we were trying to get through when we wrote this book and trying to put it out there for our clients now and other freelancers and people that are looking to start their own business.
Which is a great thing to do because the impression, as I said, that I got was this is valuable information. It's the sort of information that normally people wouldn't want to share because that's almost the secret sauce of the business. So, you know, for those who are listening, go and buy this book. and I mean that. It's because it is... It's almost like as you've gone through something, you've got the lesson. So, okay, this is what we wanted to do. This is how we did it. This is where it went wrong. This is where it went right. So do this and don't do that.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the main point of it. I'm a big believer in educating others and sharing the lessons that you've learned through your experiences. I have my own site where I regularly blog about things that I'm going through as an entrepreneur. And so this book was just kind of a culmination of all those lessons that we had learned and just an opportunity to share it with other people that they want to build their own business too.
So coming back to FreeUp, so all these things that you develop, so you start as on the path of an entrepreneur, and it's almost like you have no idea through as it meanders where it's going to take you. One of the things is that this desire to sort of tell other people how to do it, which is this fantastic sort of law of abundance, which I think is amazing. But secondly, this idea of FreeUp, which is your taking on the likes of Upwork and all the big players. So tell us about that.
Yeah, of course. So while we were building the first Amazon business, we kind of learned, and just through networking, we learned about Odesk, which is now Upwork. And we saw this, we kind of got addicted to it. We were like, ooh, this is really cool. We can hire people for pretty affordable rates. We can put them on our own schedules. And they can help us build this business faster than if we were to try to bring on W-2 employees here in the States and in our direct area. And so we got really into it, but what we found was that you can go to the Upworks, you can go to, you know, monster.com, freelancer.com, but it's all the same experience. So you post the job, you receive applicants, you try to filter through them, but at the end of the day, you either make a good hire or a bad hire. And if you make a good hire, it could work out for some time. You know, you have them on your team and it's going well, but at any time they could leave you or something could go wrong. And then if you make a bad hire, you've just wasted a lot of time and money trying to find the right person. So we wanted there to be a better way. And so that's how we kind of came about starting FreeUp. We wanted to take in applicants, these freelancers that have skills within e-commerce, and we wanted to put them through our own interview process that we had proven to work really well for us while we were hiring. And we also created 15 pages of communication guidelines because communication is one of the biggest issues when you're outsourcing or hiring freelancers. That we wanted to test them on before they got into the marketplace as well. And so this was how this all kind of came together. And once those freelancers got into the network, we then made them available to our clients at, you know, rates between $5 and $50 an hour and on a first come, first serve basis. So today our clients love us because at any time they can easily go to FreeUp, tell us exactly who they need to grow their business, and we provide it to them within hours. They can figure out if it's the best person that they want to hire. If they do, they hire them, they get started working, and they know that they're a reliable person. And so, like you were saying in the beginning, it all did start by us wanting to educate other business owners on how they could hire freelancers better.
But which is brilliant. So let's just go back to the pain that you're solving with FreeUp.
Sure.
I want to paint a picture here. So let's say that I go, and I've done this. So, you know, I think what you're doing is brilliant. I went on to Upwork and I said, right, this is a particular job that I wanted. And I must have, if I hadn't have switched it off, I would still be getting applications today.
Yeah.
You know, like absolutely. 3 months later. So I would be, all I'm doing really is creating more work for them. It doesn't solve a problem because all I get is this deluge of applications from $5 an hour to $105 an hour. Right. And I've got to go through every single one of those and try and magically figure out if this person A is a real person, mm-hmm. B if they're doing the work themselves or if they're trying to outsource it through three layers.
Yeah.
So you're solving that problem.
Yeah, definitely. And that was a huge pain that we ran into when we first got into it as well, into hiring. And what we realized was, you know, hiring is kind of a science, right? There's a lot that goes into the interview process and the questions that you should be asking to make sure that you're getting the right answers, because everyone that's on, you know, Upwork and these other places, they're usually trained to do really well in interviews. So if you're not experienced with hiring and you don't know what to be looking for, what red flags to watch out for, you could easily, you know, hire someone thinking that they're going to be a great person, and then they just don't communicate with you, or they decide to leave the job after a week or two of you hiring them. So there's a lot of art to hiring, and that's kind of what we bring to the game for these clients.
So when you started out, did you think, again, way back in, you know, 09, 2010, were you thinking, okay, great, we've got this fabulous idea, we're making money, let's build up the staff, let's build up the team?
For the first business, no, we weren't thinking that at first. We were just kind of focused on doing it ourselves and getting our own hands dirty and trying to do as much as possible. It probably wasn't until 1 or 2 years in that we decided to hire some college friends and started to put things on their plate, so it wasn't necessarily on ours. And then it wasn't until 4 years in that we learned about freelancers and really saw the opportunity to start working with them. So it took some time.
Is it not tempting though to think, okay, this is the way that you're supposed to build a business? You're supposed to get an idea, hire people, because the first question people ask you is, so Connor, how many people do you hire? How big is your company?
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, that's definitely
going through that pain. Did you think, hang on, this is rubbish. I don't want to hire people. Why are people telling me to hire people?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's one of the toughest decisions. And it's also tough to figure out the timing when you're a small business, right? Let's say you even start making, you know, $500 per month. What are you doing with that, right? Do you want to put that into someone else, or are you trying to put that into your own pocket? At what level do you get to when it makes sense to actually invest money into people, and how can they actually help you? And I think it is very much a learning experience for each individual person, because you really have to see the impact that others can make on your business and see how that investment into them is definitely worth it over the long run. Because when you're young and you're starting your first business, it can be hard to come to terms with taking $300 of that $500 and putting it into someone to help you grow.
And how important do you think a financial plan is from the outset? Because I know, as an entrepreneur, I've got this great idea. I don't need a financial plan. It's all in my head. I know everything that's going on. And you're a 10-year visionary. You know, you have this. How important is it to put the cold towel on your head and say, hang on, you know, let's map this out a bit?
I think there is some importance to it, but I'm definitely not a proponent of, you know, putting together a 25-page business plan. I think that you can think through things enough and get to the point where you can launch something and see if you can get interest, see if you can get your first customers, and then come up with a plan either by yourself or with your business partner on how you want to manage the financials. So I think there's kind of leaner ways that you can go about managing those, the financials or the starting points of your business, rather than putting together a plan, let's say, and trying to stick directly to it.
And also, what if the plan that you almost put into effect goes wrong?
So yeah, that's definitely common too, right? So at the start of a business, things change very, very quickly. So you spend 2 weeks creating a plan. 2 weeks later, it could be completely obsolete because you found that your first customers like a slightly different product. So yeah, at the beginning, I definitely encourage a lot more trial and error and talking to real customers rather than, you know, sitting at a desk and trying to plan things out.
And diversification. I mean, there's focus and diversification, and you can be focused but diversify. So what sort of lessons have you learned about not putting all your eggs in one basket?
Yes, absolutely. So a great story that comes with that applies to FreeUp at the start of FreeUp, actually. So we got burned with our first business. We were working with just one supplier when we started. And at a certain point, as the business was growing, they decided that they didn't want to work with us at the same capacity that they had been. And so our business just dropped off because we weren't diversified. We were only working with one supplier. And so that taught us, hey, let's work with 10 suppliers. We'll do slightly less volume with each of them. But if one were to fall off the map, we can continue to move on and find someone to replace them very easily. And so when we were starting FreeUp, we had these lessons in our mind. And so instead of just putting all of our eggs into helping people hire workers through a, you know, an online marketplace similar to Upwork or Freelancer, we started to offer, you know, kind of four different things. So we diversified. We were offering Amazon classes. So we were teaching people how to sell on Amazon safely. Yeah. We were offering just e-commerce consulting services on an hourly basis between myself and my other co-founder. So that was something that we were offering to initial clients. And then we were offering the ability to actually hire remote workers that we had worked with in the past. And so by diversifying and offering these different services, we actually got a lot of our first customers through the Amazon classes and through the e-commerce consulting. And then as they learned that we were intelligent, we could give them a good experience, we kind of would mention the hiring remote workers as well. And that became something that they trusted us enough to try out too. So by diversifying and focusing on those three things at first, it really allowed us to get the business off the ground rather than having to just, you know, focus on the hiring remote workers that may have taken a lot longer to get those first customers.
So it's diversification, but it's all within the same sector. So what you're doing is you're really squeezing the juice, as it were, out of your knowledge of Amazon. So
yes,
it's not. And again, I think that focus is critical with any startup. So what you're doing there is saying, I'm focused on this product, but there are different ways of leveraging that experience. Is that your what you were saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And also just being able to offer a variety of things to, you know, you might be focused on one set of customers, right? So at first we were focused on Amazon sellers. And we were really trying to focus into that market and get in there somehow. But maybe the hiring remote workers was a harder way to get into them. But if we could just offer them Amazon classes or just e-commerce consulting, that may be an easier way to get in touch with them and then get them to come into our network and start working with us in other ways. So yeah, I agree with the statement that you made there.
So on that same thread of diversification, what's next?
What's next? So in terms of that, my business partner and I, we always talk and we meet about potential threats to the business, and diversification always comes up as one of those. Right now, we're about 18 months into the business, and we started mainly as a hiring marketplace for e-commerce businesses. That was our expertise. That was the space we had come from. But what we've identified as a threat is, let's say for whatever reason, Amazon sellers just stopped wanting to work with us, or Amazon stopped allowing Amazon sellers to hire freelancers and allow them to start doing things on their Amazon seller accounts. Yeah. That would be a huge drop off in clients for us.
Yeah.
And so we've started to identify other similar markets of business owners. Let's say like the real estate business. Yeah. There's a lot of mundane tasks there that need freelancers. Maybe you're going into more people that are running Shopify stores. It's still in e-commerce, but it's slightly different than what Amazon is. So we've started to identify these different markets, and we're trying to diversify and get the word out about FreeUp into those, so that as we grow, we can start to expand into different markets and not be as dependent upon one, you know, source of revenue.
Yes. And one thing I came across the other day with Amazon is Mechanical Turk, which is this fantastic thing that very few people know about, which is this global army of what Amazon describe as artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I know a little bit about them. I think we've used them for a few projects, you know, earlier on with our first business. And I know a lot of people who really love them for collecting data on certain things, because you can easily go there and say, you know, I need information on XYZ, and you'll pay, I don't know, a couple, maybe pennies on the information or dollars per hour for the people, and they'll get you that information very quickly.
It's fascinating. So, and where do you see your empire? I mean, now you've had a taste of it and you've had, it's all working. Where do you stop?
Yeah, of course. Do you stop? No, we don't really stop. We'll always keep going. There may be adjustments along the way. With FreeUp right now, we're very young still. We've experienced some amazing growth where, you know, we're servicing over 2,500 online businesses with the platform right now. And we want to just keep growing. We want to expand into those other markets. We want to offer other freelancer skills that we're not offering on the marketplace yet. You know, a big thing that we'll do is we'll go to Upwork, we'll go to freelancer.com, we'll look at every single skill set they offer, which is thousands upon thousands. Yeah. And you know, maybe right now we're offering hundreds. So we're always trying to bring new skills into the platform to offer to our current clients, and then to attract other types of clients as well. So our goal with FreeUp is really to build it as big as it can get to a network that is competing with these other larger hiring marketplaces.
Yes. And I think there is space for them, because it's not a binomial type of marketplace, you know, where you're either Google or you're not. So yeah. I think there's, you know, because they're not perfect, these marketplaces, and they can create more work than they actually solve, you know, the moment you get involved. So
yeah, definitely. It's also it's similar to when I first got into e-commerce. One of the things that I loved about it most was it was still growing. It was within the first 15 years of getting off the ground, and there were some giants that were coming into the industry. And that's very similar with the online hiring industry. As you know, the world is getting more and more globalized, and more people are getting connected to internet and trying to start businesses. They're going to be looking to find new talent all over the world. So that's something that's really interesting to me, and I love being in that space.
And I think the fact that you have all of this experience, hard-won experience as an entrepreneur, as a successful entrepreneur, and the fact that you're effectively offering building blocks to people, saying, if you want to be an entrepreneur, here's my advice, here's my book, you know, 50 things you've always wanted to know about being an entrepreneur, but we're afraid to ask, effectively. Mm-hmm. Here's my, you know, virtual assistant company. So do you get a lot of satisfaction from empowering people to actually follow their dreams?
Yes, of course. That's always been what drives me. I really love empowering others. I really like making a positive impact. I usually don't talk about this on shows just because it was earlier before I started the businesses, but I had some amazing opportunities living in pretty rural and impoverished areas building social businesses. And so I would love to get back into that space as I get older as well. So for me, it's really all about that impact. How many people can you impact with the businesses you're building in some sort of positive way? And FreeUp has really allowed me to do that and harness that power, because of, you know, you're giving a lot of people jobs, and then you're also helping people build profitable businesses that could give them that lifestyle that they're looking for.
And it's funny, but all the people that I speak to, all the successful people, that's what drives them. It starts off money and but ultimately, once you get through that, you think, well, you can only have so much money, and what I'm doing isn't actually feeding my soul. But to be able to do something where you feel like you're doing good, and this is really important, because you know, to people that are on the other side, it sounds cheesy. Do you know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's hard to get to that point too mentally, because of, like we were talking about earlier, if you're on any social media, if you're on the internet, all you're seeing is quick success stories. It's not necessarily focused on that. Hey, find something you're passionate about, build a business around that, and try to make it something that's long-term and impacting people. It's more, hey, in 3 months, I was able to earn $500,000 in sales. That obviously clicks in the mind a lot faster than trying to build something that's long-term and impacting people.
Yeah, and I think it is those two key things, long-term and impacting people, doing good, mm-hmm. Not from a charitable perspective, but actually creating something that people view as valuable,
exactly.
Whether it's a service or a product, because I think that's how you get real satisfaction as an entrepreneur. As a business mm-hmm. owner, the fact that you wake up every morning and you think, I'm actually doing something that's making a difference. And
yeah.
That's something that you feel now.
Yeah, I love that. And I mean, I think all entrepreneurs are inherently problem solvers too. You want to solve other people's problems. So that's a big thing with FreeUp as well. We're solving a lot of people's problems when it comes to hiring. And in terms of freelancers, we're giving them an easier route to work with growing businesses. So we're kind of solving problems on both ends of the marketplace, which is just something I love to see happening.
Well, I get the impression that there's a lot more of this to come.
I hope so. That's the plan. I have a lot of things that I want to achieve, and this is just one of those stops along the way. So.
And I think the other thing I think is just tremendous is the fact that you're sharing all of this and you're pulling people with you. You're linking arms and you're marching forwards with this army of people that are learning from your experience. How do people find out more about you? How do they contact you? How do they tap into that huge resource that you're very willing to share with them?
Yes, of course. So if you want to contact me directly, you can go to my website. It's just ConnorGillivan.com, just my name. There's a lot of advice there on building your business, in the first couple of years of getting off the ground. And there you can easily contact me directly. You'll find my email address, you'll find my Facebook, my Twitter, and you can reach out to me there. And then of course, if you're interested in hiring remote workers or learning about that aspect of building your business, you can visit freeup.com, and that's freeup with three E's. So it's FreeUp.com.
Wonderful. That's brilliant. Well, that's great. Well, Connor, thank you so much. You've been it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. I know that all of the information that you've got is going to be hugely valuable to all of those entrepreneurs that are making the first step. So, thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me today, too. It was a blast.